Blog Talk Radio.
Не просто спишь.
Bergeron.
Yours to Tornado, Johnny Pennicale.
I'm sure Tony's chomping at the bit for the interview we've got tonight with Antonio Tarver. And I've been tweeting about it to get people ready to tune in and listen. So hopefully we got a big audience tonight for that. And Antonio himself has retweeted all my tweets. So.
What did he say?
Antonio himself retweeted all the promos I put out there. So he's.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not only did he do it, but his son did it. Once, well, at least once. I didn't even know there was an Antonio Tarver Jr. And I
was unaware.
I did read something about him preparing himself for a pro career, but I don't know if he's actually started that. But he's on Twitter, and he retweeted one of the posts, and I went to his Twitter account and looked on his. Twitter handle has the word champ in it, and his father tweeted to his son that you wanna take that out. You haven't earned that yet, son. So that was kind of funny. And there's Tom. How are you going? How's it going there, second Tom?
Oh, man, all excited, so much to talk about. World Hall of Fame guest. What more could I ask for?
Sure. Well, you could ask for hindsight is 20/20 vision, I guess.
Okay. Oh, I'm tapping. Okay, ref, I'm tapping. Rich got me. Oh man, what a fight!
Robbie Lawler versus Matt Brown, UFC on Fox 12. There, what a fight! That, like I said. It was probably one of the fights of the year, maybe not the fight of the year, but Matt Brown did have an excuse. He did have about 6 months off, according to his suspension, because of medical reasons. Busted his nose up pretty good there, or Lawler did, and injured his right hand at some point, but he didn't mention any breaks or anything like that. He went to the hospital right after the fight. Lawler really seemed in control for most of the fight, except for the second round. But the scores, I thought, were a little overwhelming in his favor. I thought Brown, was a little more competitive than they gave him credit for. And I think a lot of the reasons those rounds went Lawler's way, because of all the facial damage he did and the fact that he ended the fight, all he had to do was take 7 days off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have been happy with 48-47 for Lawler, but let's face it, the right guy won. But my take on this is I think that this is another example of what a good boxing rhythm could do in a fight. Like, if you've seen how Lawler was just so relaxed, he was staying in the pocket, he had good head movement, he was slipping shots, he was mixing things up. And, I mean, I know that he was doing more than just boxing, but when a guy's in that kind of a rhythm, and Brown couldn't seem to get him out of it, because Brown's whole thing was to keep coming forward, putting pressure on, but it's hard to do when you're running into punches like he was running into. And I think Robbie showed good submission defense, and he had some good kicks, but I think this is another example why more MMA guys really need to focus on their boxing. That's my take on it.
Definitely. I thought he was actually not aggressive enough at a lot of points. Maybe he was too relaxed, but, you know, it worked for him. Can't really knock him for it, but there was points where he could have taken Brown out of there. You know, maybe he didn't believe that was possible, so he really didn't push the action, but...
Well, exactly.
Brown was winning.
And I kind of think that maybe this shows the maturity that Robbie Lawler has, because I think in the old days, when he was knocking so many people out, I think he may have just blew his wad early on after the second or third round, but I think he knew it was a five-round fight. He was fighting a very, very tough man. And, I think that the takeaway is, if your opponent is in that kind of a relaxed boxing rhythm, you better get him out of that, or you're in for a long night. And I think that Johnny Hendrick, I read a comment where Johnny was saying it'll be fun to fight him with two hands or something. I'm looking forward to it. Well, Johnny better be ready. I hope for his sake he's not looking past this fight. And as far as Matt Brown, I guess the question is, where does he go from here? And I know that Dana had said that even though he lost, this is not going to hurt him, but hard to say where he'll be after.
He had a little bit of a weight struggle. I think he actually missed a week. And then there was a lot of comments on Twitter that his conditioning was lacking. And I actually responded to one post and said, yeah, he was huffing and puffing like the big bad wolf at a couple points. And I don't know whether that had anything to do with his nose being busted or just... you know, his physique. I mean, he does have kind of like a little bit of a midriff, which you don't see on a lot of fighters, so maybe he just needs to get his conditioning up to par. That the pre-fight stuff that I saw, I mean, he's out in the parking lot with a wheelbarrow pushing around some weights, you know, so maybe he needs some better technology or something in his workout plan, because I don't know, I just thought... you know, when you get paid that much to fight professionally, you're in a main event. You shouldn't be huffing and puffing.
Or not have to worry about making weight the day of the weigh-in. I mean, this is a science now. Maybe I could have understood this even 10, 15 years ago, but now, I mean, these guys have borrowed from the wrestlers have really taught everyone how to do this now, and I was just really surprised. And I guess. My question, and I haven't even watched the I haven't seen the video of it, but the question is, what's Matt Brown going to do different? Because his stand-up was just it just was not crisp compared to Lawler. It was not that economical. And so I guess the question is, if it was conditioning or technique or something, it's not like Matt Brown's new at this. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you can reinvent yourself at this stage, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I think, you know, he already had a lot going for him going into this fight. He was doing great, and I think the one hole was his conditioning, because he could have been more aggressive, you know, at a lot of points, too. He just had his wits about him and some breath. He might have done a lot better, but one guy that did stun everybody, I think, including Antonio Rogério Nogueira, was Anthony Rumble Johnson. 44-second knockout. Unbelievable. Cut him open, too. Cut Nogueira open pretty good. And just established himself as one of the pound-for-pound best in that division. And, you know, if Daniel Cormier doesn't take out John Jones first, he's going to get a shot at Jones one of these days, I think.
Yeah, I think that Johnson, if you think about it, when I can't imagine when he was trying to make 170, because he looked like he weighed in about 220. I don't know what he did. I mean, I know he made weight the day before. But I think what we're forgetting about him, too, is not only does he have dynamite in his hands, but he's got a strong wrestling background. So he's hard to take down. And I know that a lot of the talk was that Little Dog is shop-worn, and I admit he's been around quite a while, but still, this had never happened to him, anything remotely this bad in the past. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Anthony really made a statement that the other guys in that division have to really plan on dealing with him somehow, and it's not an enviable assignment, for sure.
And Dennis Bermudez kept his win streak going. He's got one of the top active win streaks in the UFC right now.
Hey, that's one of the ones I got right. That's one of the ones I got right. Okay.
Clay's kind of fallen off the last few years, and he hasn't had that many impressive performances, but I think it's just that kind of a character that the UFC will never throw him out. And he went down by rear naked choke in the second round, the 257 mark, and was bouncing right back up, running around the ring afterwards. So, it didn't really seem to faze him losing like that. You'd like to see a guy get a little bit more upset.
Yes, that was very bizarre, I thought. Very bizarre.
That's Clay. He's always positive. We had Bobby Green, his decision, split decision to Josh Thompson. Jorge Masvidal had a unanimous decision over Darren Cruikshank. Patrick Cummins had a unanimous decision over Kyle Kingsbury. Kyle Kingsbury retired after that fight. Tim Means beat Hernani Perpetuo by unanimous decision. Brian Ortega, rear naked choke, Mike De La Torre. Thiago Dos Santos E. Silva had a unanimous decision over Akbar Ariola. Gilbert Burns beat Andreas Stahl by unanimous decision. A lot of decisions on the undercard here. We also had a female fight, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I guess. Pronouncing that at all correctly. She unanimous decision to Julia de Lima Carneiro. And finally, the first fight. Guy who will be graduating to a bigger fight, Noad Lahat, Steven Seiler. Lahat is a member of the Israeli Defense Force. So he'll be going over to assist them in the days to come, even though they just signed agreed to a 72-hour ceasefire. I'm sure they'll be going right back at it. Good time, but that was pretty interesting. That was a big story. But he was going to fight with them. Another big story this week, I sent you guys a video. A gas station clerk, or cashier there in Texas, has been all over the airwaves. I've even seen tweets from Africa about this guy, stories from African newspapers. This guy, I don't have his name right in front of me, but I'm sure I'll find it here. Mayura Disinyaki works at the Fetal Depot, but I think eventually he's going to make his way to the Ultimate Fighter, because Dana White even commented on this guy. He was behind the counter when one of his co-workers was coming back from the store after a run to the bank. Two men jumped into an SUV and attacked the guy. And so this guy comes out, kicks one guy in the face who was bent over, and then just starts mauling all the other guys. And just takes them out. And then one guy got left behind by his buddy. His buddy just said, fuck this, we're gone. And we're not about trying to help, but a couple kicks to the body from Disignate there. And, they left.
Well, you remember now, his one buddy was thinking that maybe we should come back and rescue him, and he kind of got waved in. Okay, come on, you want some more? Come on back. Yeah, that was such a feel good story. I mean, I don't see how anyone couldn't feel good seeing that. So hopefully they'll get the other two scumbags. Yeah, that was great.
I thought that was absolutely great because what was too many people going out there these days, you know, they're running them off because, you know, sad to say, like, unfortunately anymore, it's like you get slaps on the wrist. You know, there's a lot of people out there, it's even worse than worse that you're in jail. That's like, you know, easier to them. It's, you know, they get to hang out with other boys and this and that. So that's not really even a punishment anymore. What this guy got was a legitimate punishment. You know, I mean, he took a hard kick, and then like I said, his boys left him, and the other boys were going to come back and get him, and he took the other guy, he even stared at him, and he was like, you know, I forget it. You know, reminded me of that scene, because we're going to be talking to one of the stars from one of the Rocky movies later. It was that one scene in Rocky V, and, you know, when you know, Rocky Jr. learns how to fight a little bit, and the two bullies keep picking on him. He finally kicks the one kid there. And then he turns the other kid, he's like, you want some? And then he's like, no, I never liked him that much anyway.
Yeah, that's great.
The guy that got left behind, they wouldn't even give the news station his mugshot because he wanted for other crimes and they want to use the mugshot for the front liner. These guys were not just burglars, they're all purpose criminals. And hopefully they'll get some time. But this guy is not any stranger to mixed martial arts. It's not like he picked it up. He's actually been a national champion in Sri Lanka for 5 consecutive years, or he was. And he's been involved with MMA for more than a decade. Yeah, I can almost guarantee that you're going to see this guy on The Ultimate Fighter. Because if Dana White's got his attention, or if he's got Dana White's attention, and Dana knows how to get to this guy, that'd be a great story for them. Great. We had a ton of boxing and mixed martial arts news to cover. Your boy Harry Joe Yorgi got a nice victory.
I thought it was a draw.
Oh, it was a draw, that's right.
I didn't see it. I read about it. I said, you know, you didn't have any action since me and Tom went to see him about 14 months ago. And they said, you know, he didn't look sharp. They didn't look sharp at all. And obviously, I don't have anything to tell off of because it was non-televised. And I can only read the reports.
And then for Eric Mitchell and Harry Joe Yorg battled it out 6 rounds. And the co-main event was a 5-bout pro card. And one judge scored Mitchell at 60-55.
He gave all rounds to Mitchell?
So, while the other two judges viewed it as a 57-57 draw. So, obviously, that judge was in the tank for Mitchell.
Well,
here we go again.
That scares me.
Because
if one judge gave all the rounds to Mitchell and then the other two had it a draw, that scares me. Because I know I went to, last year, me and Tom went to the fight in June. It was a 10-rounder. It was a rematch of the previous fight that was a 6-rounder. And it was a split decision for Harry. You know, I had a 58-56. I had it even after 4 rounds, and I had Harry closely winning the 5th and then dominating the 6th to win the decision. Another judge had it 58-56 for his opponent. And then the third judge had it 60-54 for Harry. Now, I said, you know, I like Harry, he's a friend of mine. But watching that fight, their first fight, and doing the scoring, his opponent, and like I said, Relentless Julius something. I can't remember his last name. But I said, well, he clearly dominated the 3rd and 4th round. Clearly dominated those rounds. To give those to Harry means you would either fill out your judge's card before the fight started, or you just weren't watching the fight, or you were playing biased.
kind of like when you get thrown out of the Air Force Academy, they had an academic review board, and the only guy in my corner wasn't really broad, but my boxing coach got to him. I think he was a help for me, but he was only one of the three.
Well, we used to have a judge that would do a lot of the fights at Penn State when I was in college. And I requested that I didn't want him judging any more of my fights. I had one fight. I fought at Lock Haven. I fought in my home arena. And I won a split decision. One of the judges gave me all three rounds and voted me outstanding boxer of the night. This guy had me losing all three rounds. This guy came up to me in a fight before a fight one time, and I was fighting at Penn State against a Penn State kid. So I'm already leery, and I'm praying they don't assign him. And, of course, they do, and I'm like, shit. Best I can do is a split decision right now, unless I knock him out. And he comes up to me before the fight. He goes, oh, good luck to him. I hope you knock him out. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to go out there and do my best. He's a tough kid. And he kind of looked at me and smiled. I'm like, I'm fucked, you know? And once again, I lost the first round, and then I closed second round. I dominate the third, knock the guy down in the third. I lose a split decision because the one judge had me losing by. He had the scores even, but in college you have to circle a winner, and he circled the other kid. I looked at this third guy's judge, the Penn State, the judge that liked Penn State, had me losing all three rounds. Couple of rounds, he had me losing because in college, it's not like you have the 10-point muscle system and you have the 10-8 rounds with knockdowns. But yeah, you can arbitrarily score a 2-point round if you think one fighter clearly won. And he had me losing the first round by 2 points. He had me losing the second round. And he was losing the third round, a round where the guy didn't even hit me and he went down. Mm-hmm. And I came out and I was like, you know what? I said, this is bullshit. And I forced a complaint, which of course went nowhere. And that's still, 15 years later, it irks the shit out of me. He couldn't tell.
Yeah. I'd tell. All right. We got a whole bunch of other stuff to cover here. He has out of retirement. Three fight game. And his first fight is going to be with Anderson Silva. I think this man is reason back to Silva asked for this fight. But he's kind of been acting a little weird since he got back. He had an interview where he said he doesn't even like to fight. It's no enjoyment out of it. It's just something you have to do. He is back, and a lot of people are excited about it. He's kind of a bad role model. I don't understand what the hype's all about. I don't think it's that great. Eddie Alvarez apparently is the guy who's involved in this mystery fight they've been hyping. UFC 178 is supposed to have a mystery fight, and people were wondering whether it was a rumor or if it was a reality, even though he's supposedly still under contract to Bellator. The reports are out now that he's going to be fighting Donald Cerrone at UFC 178, Cowboy Cerrone, on September 27th. So hopefully that's the true story, but that's what's going around. Should be a good fight. And I know that, a lot of fans wanted to see the third installment of the Chandler fight. But after Chandler got beat by the replacement, when Alvarez got out of that fight with a concussion, didn't really make that third match very viable. So now Chandler is the biggest star in Bellator, I guess. Or one of the biggest. So we'll see how that works out. Bellator also had an event Friday, and you might have missed it because a lot of the fights were knockouts, stoppages. There was one fight on the televised card that went to decision. The rest of them were all stoppages, and four of the five stoppages that were televised were actually three of the four, I should say, were first rounders. Main event was Linton Vassell versus Virgil Zwicker. Vassell won by rear naked choke in the first round. We had the only decision was Andre Koroshkov versus Adam McDonough. Koroshkov won that one by decision. Unanimous. Brandon Halsey submitted Brett Cooper by armbar submission. Liam McGeary beat Hegidius Valavicius by TKO in the first round. Punches and knees there, a 210 mark. Kyle Parisian destroyed Phil Baroni by TKO at the 206 mark, and Parisian looked very good. Like he's ready to make a serious run at stringing some wins together for once. Phil, he's kind of been up and down. Doesn't have that great a record, but you know, he's always a tough opponent, so it was very impressive on Parisian's part there. In the undercard fights, we had Augusto Sakai beat Matt Fremling by TKO in the third round at 332 mark. Bubba Jenkins beat Poppy's Martinez in the first round by TKO with just 50 seconds left in that first round. Kelly Anunsen beat Luis Philip Lins by TKO due to a knee injury in the first round. Fernando Gonzalez beat Carl Anasu by unanimous decision. Saad Awad beat Joe Duarte by TKO, elbows in the first round, the 118 mark. Sergio Rios beat Steven Martinez by head kick and punches knockout in the second round, just 20 seconds in. And that was it for Bellator 122. And I think that was the last one with the tournament format in place. I think they're going to get rid of that after this. So. Another super fight coming your way in 2015 outside the octagon. Matt Hughes versus Tenzin Gracie. This is going to have to be Abu Dhabi Combat Club fight. Tenzin grappling. Take place in Manaus, Brazil, September. Interesting development there. Here's an interesting statistic. 10 of the UFC's events this year were headlined by Strikeforce fighters that came on board after the merger. Something I did not know if I found out today on Twitter. I thought that was interesting. Another performance enhancing drug story. Kevin Casey and Robert Drysdale had some impressive wins in their last fights, but both of them tested positive for banned substances. Drysdale had elevated testosterone level, which is the second offense on that. So lay off the testosterone there, buddy. Kevin Casey had taken something called Drostanolone. It's used primarily by athletes who need to retain strength while losing mass. And I think it was the same thing that Cyborg got busted for. So it's just one of those things that fighters turn to when they need to lose weight and build muscle. Stay in their weight class. It's actually more commonly used by bodybuilders. Kevin Casey's already come out and apologized for it and said that he used it. Mike Tyson, back in the news again. Not only has he's got this mystery show airing, Mike Tyson's Mysteries on Adult. This looks pretty good. I've seen some previews, but he's also working on a biography of himself, a biopic they call it, and Jamie Foxx is going to play him.
I heard that on the radio this morning, and I heard Martin Scorsese was going to be involved in that also.
Yeah, And not only that, but they're going to use what they call CGI. And,
okay.
And it's going to be the same technology they used in that movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Okay.
The Jamie Foxx is Tyson's age or older. And, you know, so they're going to use that CGI to bring him back to when Tyson was younger. So, let's see how they do that.
Well, what they could do these days is amazing, ain't it?
Yeah. Not too chatty. We'll see how it goes. Vladimir Klitschko, speaking of heavyweights, he's back in the news, talking about not only his upcoming fight, but also the shit going on in his homeland, in Ukraine there, with the downing of the plane and the Russians supporting the rebels there. Get your hands off the Ukraine. That's a direct message to Vladimir Putin. We are not Russia, we are Ukraine, he says. He's currently training in South Florida for a September fight in Germany, and he's talking about this latest incident. He said it is clear that Russia has been supplying and supporting all the terror that has been going on in Ukraine. It's very difficult to stay focused on the sport because the news is so shocking. It's probably terrorism. He also said it's important to understand that we have to act together to stop the terrorism. Also, on a side note, our former guest, Michael Mora, had to get between Klitschko and his new...
Shannon Briggs,
yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if you sent the picture or if you had posted it on Facebook, but I saw that again. Shannon, itching for a beating, you know? It's like, didn't Beatley beat you up bad enough a couple years ago?
I don't know, though. I mean, considering some of the guys that have been up against Klitschko recently, I think Shannon might actually be one to give him a fight. And he's obviously so incensed and so angry that...
he obviously wants to fight. One of those old ads, be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it.
Well, there's a long line in front of Klitschko, unfortunately, for...
money speaks.
We'll see. He's persistent enough, and Klitschko really wants to get rid of him. He's going to have to fight him someday.
I guess so. Okay, you want to see him going out.
Yeah, pretty sure he's supposed to call in. So,
is he calling in or we dial on him?
I think he's calling in. I don't remember ever getting the phone number for him. Let's see what else we got.
I'm going to tweet him then, Rich.
Hey. Alright, what else do we need? Mike Tyson. Oh, there's a funny one. Joe Riggs, we talked last week, he just got his first fight in the UFC. He's out of Bellator after they championed him in his reality show, gave him a contract. He left him. I guess he jinxed himself somehow by turning his back on them, because... he ended up shelfing the hand and the leg. Wow, done. So, now out of his return. He has some time to go to some gun safety class. But the response to that tweet that broke that news first saw was, how do you go and clean a gun and not know it's loaded?
I mean, it's not really funny, but I can't help but laugh. It's wrong to be laughing, but can't help it.
Well, it is funny because he didn't kill himself. You know?
That kind of reminds me of Moe on the Three Stooges after he pulled the trigger and, hey, I didn't know it was loaded, you know, just give the gun back, you know.
Yeah.
A guy from my old neck of the woods, Steve Bucosa from Quincy, Mass. He's coming off a 12-year layoff to fight in a main event. So for all us old guys, I guess we're all pulling for him. But this guy is actually 37 years old, and that's 1 year older than me. And he wrestled for North Quincy High, so I'm pretty sure if he was on varsity, that I saw him wrestling, you know, at the same time I was wrestling, so he was probably on the team at the same time. If he was wrestling at the same weight he's boxing at, it would have been heavyweight, and he probably got beat by our guy, because our guy was pretty much undefeated. He was the punter on the football team, too, and he's a pretty big dude. Pretty much unstoppable. I think only a couple guys beat him. But he's now going to be going up against Jason Estrada this Saturday at Royale in Boston in the main event. Estrada has 20 wins, 4 losses, and 1 draw. And Bucosa is only 6-5. Kind of like an opponent situation for Bucosa, but he's not considering it that way. Taking it seriously. He drives a bus during the day and goes and trains at the gym at night. So he said, I always wanted to come back and finish it up around here. I hate the way things ended. I had blown out a knee, and after 2 operations, things were not working out. So I had to decide to pursue a regular job, but I'd rather see my career end in the ring than in the doctor's office. 1 or 2 fights, win, lose, or draw, I'm going to be done. This is my way of ending by putting an exclamation point on my boxing career, and it'll be fun. So.
Well, all I can say is good luck. We'll see how much fun he has.
Right. I don't know if you could call fighting a guy with that kind of record fun.
That's my point exactly.
Yeah. Kind of dangerous to look at it that way. Henry Cejudo will be the 3rd Olympic gold medalist to compete for the UFC after signing a promotional contract. It was announced Friday. Cejudo became the youngest U.S. Olympic wrestling champion at 21 at the Beijing Games in 2008. He's the son of illegal immigrants from Mexico, and his story gained instant fame after a book was published called American Victory about his life story. He actually did not qualify for London at the 2012 U.S. Olympic trials and then gave up wrestling instead of a career. So his first bout is going to be in Sacramento, California at the end of this coming month, August 30th, and he's 6-0 with 4 knockouts already as a professional. But I always wanted to become a student of the game and at least get 6 to 8 fights before coming to the UFC. Now I think I'm in my prime, and I've never felt this strong in my life. I won the Olympics at 21. I could only grow half a mustache, and now I've got a full beard. So he joins fellow wrestlers Kevin Jackson and Mark Schultz in competing in the UFC after winning Olympic golds. Of course, another Olympic medalist is Ronda Rousey. Pretty impressive there. Pretty impressive company. All right. Just going to send Antonio a little message here. Now he knows what time it is. been tweeting it. All right, so another former guest of ours, Jimmy Quinlan, is in the news. The East Coast Fighting Championship announced on Friday, July 25th, that Jimmy Quinlan and Christopher Orso have joined the promotions team. Jimmy Quinlan was on our show a while back, just after he was on The Ultimate Fighter. And he was a member of Chael Sonnen's team on season 17, and he's a Bridgewater State College graduate. And he's also been involved in UFC backstage operations in both Europe and the United States. And he has experience running numerous MMA productions, including the IMMAF Amateur World Championships in Las Vegas. And, of course, he competed himself in the UFC and won a World BJJ Championship and 3 Pan Am BJJ Championships. And if that's not enough, he's also a part-time police officer.
Nice.
He says, I'm part of the East Coast Fighting Championship team. I've been to hundreds of MMA events all over the world, and I've also competed at the highest level. The EECFT vision and mission are right on. They are filling a gap in the market and doing it the right way. This is a promotion with a long and prosperous future, and I'm glad that I'm now part of it. And the next event that he's going to be involved in will take place at the Lowell Memorial Auditorium in Lowell, Massachusetts on Friday, September 12th. There is a pre-fight block party that starts at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, and the fight's going underway at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. So I wish him the best of luck there. On Twitter here real quick and shoot out a message to Antonio. What's going on? You know, a few years ago I discovered that at least a year ago now, after the first time Tony asked for this interview, scoured the internet looking for an official website for Antonio.
You figure, I guess I've been calling for this interview for about at least 3 years now.
Yeah.
Maybe longer.
And
I got the ultimate opening question.
I looked all over the place trying to find his official website. And, you know, some of them were just parking pages, and others were taken over by somebody else. The official website at the time I was looking for. At least on Twitter, he's very easy to find. His handle is at Antonio Tarver. Somebody didn't steal that one. Oops. Yeah, maybe he's in Vegas. He thinks it's Vegas time.
Yeah, that's something I was asking him today. Like, where is he located? And I was like, well, I know he's originally from Tampa, Florida, but I thought he'd relocated to Vegas. Actually, similar to his character in Rocky Balboa, who was from Tampa that relocated to Vegas.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The next Rocky movie that we're going to see, if it ever comes to fruition, is the one that's supposedly going to be about Apollo Creed's son getting into boxing.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask Antonio. Like, have they reached out to him at all to possibly resume his role as Mason the Lion Dixon? I think one of the funniest parts of the latest Rocky movie, which is not in the movie, but Carl Weathers was pissed because he wanted a role in the movie. and he wouldn't let his likeness be used at all because they wouldn't give him a role. And it's like, you're dead. We killed you off 2 movies ago. How can you have a role in the movie? And I said, no. I said, I could have found a role for him. I said, he could have been Apollo's long-lost, troublemaking twin brother, Rollo Creed. And Rollo, basically, after Rocky lost all his money in the beginning of Rocky V, Rollo didn't give a shit. But now Rocky got a little bit of money. He had the restaurant open. He was going to try to sue him for the wrongful death of his brother.
Huh.
It would have got him a role. I don't know how much it would have added to the plot of the movie, but it would have got him a role. Even in the beginning, like, you know, they could open with a court scene. Like, you know, every scene they open with a fight. Well, this one opened with Dixon knocking out, like, a no-name challenger. But they could, the fight could have started with Rocky taking down Rollo Creed in court. They're like, Rollo, we award you nothing. You're a shikester. And Carl Weathers would have got a part, and he would have added to the plot of the movie.
Rocky V was the one where he realized he had brain damage, right?
Yeah, and then they went back and Rocky Balboa and said, no, he didn't have brain damage, he had a real severe concussion, and the tests were done so quickly after the fight that the concussion made it look like he had brain damage.
Wait. His fighting style would give way to brain damage.
His fighting style what?
Would give way to brain damage, I think. The way,
well, yeah.
Not a very technical fighter, to say the least.
Except in Rocky III, of course.
Yeah.
When he fought the Apollo style.
Anyway, speaking of brain damage, Rian Barral talked about his last fight with TJ Dillashaw recently. Last May, his fight with Dillashaw. He's about to have a rematch. He ended up admitting that he has no memory of any of the fight after the punch that dropped him. This article made a big mistake. Talk about some bad writing. Listen to this sentence. During a recent media scrum, the Brazilian reveals that he has no memory of any of the fight until the punch that dropped him. So you're saying he woke up after that? No.
Mm.
He says, remember everything that happened at the point. So, what to say, any of the fight after the punch that dropped him. Yeah, but after that punch, I only woke up in the locker room. The fight was really close in the beginning, but everything changed after that punch. So, that's kind of concerning to me, especially because they've signed up for this rematch. And Morale and his team complained that he didn't have enough time to prepare for Dillashaw before their first bout. And now he's deciding to skip adequate rest, recovery, and training time to prepare for this second fight. So it doesn't matter. Barral said, he landed a heavy punch in the beginning of the fight, and I kept fighting on autopilot. I was too slow. I wasn't thinking. Both told me to do one thing, and I didn't hit it. But I will fight smart this time. Hope this happens. Dillashaw's Wayne Ludwig said recently that he believes the fight is happening too soon in every way and wondered why Barral would not allow himself enough time to heal up after the memory-wiping concussion he received against Dillashaw not long ago. By accepting a fight in late August, Barral has had to basically jump right back into a training camp and not let his mind and body take working far. And that's been a lot of the fighters' concerns when talked about head injuries and brain damage and all that. Sparring. It's not so much the fighting, but just sparring. It's constant. So. I don't know what he thinks. Does you always have to bring something new? I accepted the fight on short notice, and I wasn't 100% ready for it, but this time will be different. I've never trained so hard in my entire life, so it's going to be different. But it doesn't seem like a wise decision on his part. It doesn't seem like a wise decision to go for the immediate rematch. scary, you know? Maybe a tune-up fight or something would be better. One guy who's not going to have a rematch is mixed martial artist named Torres, Joe Torres, who we talked about a few times. He's the guy who killed somebody in a home invasion near Las Cruces, California in January, or New Mexico. And on New Year's Day, a guy named Sal Garces, 25 years old, three other men forced their way into a home in the neighborhood there, Mr. Torres. And Torres, his fiance, and a toddler were home at the And Garces and Torres then got into a fight. And when deputies arrived, they found Garces in the road with stab wounds, and he later died from his injuries. The sheriff's investigation, numerous interviews, fingerprint DNA analysis, and a complete autopsy. The district attorney's office says there was not enough evidence to prove Torres killed Garces without legal justification. The DA said the decision not to charge Mr. Torres is based on the facts and the forensic evidence presented by our team, in particular, it is the scientific evidence that led to that decision. So, good news for Mr. Torres there, and anybody who defends themselves in similar situations, they're not going to get charged if somebody dies because they're being stupid. Anyway, let's see what else we got. We're calling this upcoming event in Dubai the largest in mixed martial arts history. One Fighting Championship, which is Asia's largest martial arts organization, with a 90% market share. Added another four bouts to this card. One FP Reign of Champions. I think it was maybe four. Let's see about August, 29th of August here. Shin Aoki will make the first defense of his title since winning it last April against Kotetsu Boku. This time he's going to take on Kamal Chalarus of Iran. I think we've had on our show, actually. He's Johnny the Other Bones, John Fiatic's buddy. We had him on. Sure will also turn action take up needed Christian Holly, former WBO and IBA Boxing World Champion Duleton will be on the card to take on a decorated Wushu and kickboxing champion Marina Azepea on Azepa. And finally there's going to be a featherweight clash between Herbert Burns and Hiroshige Tanaka. That's obviously not all the fights. And let's see what else we got. Oh, and speaking of John Shattuck, he went over to Latvia, you know. Just got back from Latvia. He was in that team fighting championship. You know what I'm talking about, Tom?
What the time? Yes.
Teams?
Yes.
Beat up teams. And, you know, one guy gets taken out and the rest of the guys go after the remainder. Very few. There's no groin strikes, obviously, no eye gouging, no strikes to the spine, I think, but pretty much everything else goes, including hair pulling, so it's pretty brutal stuff. And Shattuck, he's 46 years old, going into that fight, and he got beat up pretty bad, but you know, he didn't get the win either. Kind of disheartening for him, but a lot of people gave him props for being at that age and still going anything like that. And you got to give him credit. Pretty good stuff. Very impressive. Just to get in there and do that. Travel all the way to Latin. That is pretty amazing stuff. Now, we talked about a little bit about the stuff going on in Ukraine there with Vladimir Klitschko standing up for his country. There's another story that's sneaking around this week about a guy named Shahbaz Ali Chowdhury. He's trained by a guy named Steve Bratter. And Chowdhury is an 18-year-old Muslim from Pakistan. And his trainer is a 72-year-old retired Jewish New York City bus driver. So an odd couple, to say the least. And Chowdhury said, the boxer said, "We really don't discuss it. We just work. My family, they accepted it. We all accepted it. My parents accept everybody. We like everybody no matter who they are. My family and friends wonder why I box, but nobody discriminates against anybody." And the coach, Bratter, said, "Maybe this should be an example. We don't think about the politics or the religion. He's a great kid. I never looked at him as a Muslim. Never looked at him as a terrorist. I looked at him as a good kid. Look at what he accomplished." And Chowdhury fought his first novice class bout last week in advance of the final of the New York boxing competition at Gleason's gym and lost a 3-1 decision Saturday night. He'll start college at New Jersey Institute of Technology in September, and he'll be majoring in biomedical engineering, hoping to be a doctor. So, pretty smart kid. And Bratter has been training fighters for about 20 years at a series of locations. Trying to make it work there. Chowdhury said, "I've always watched boxing since I was a little kid. I started to try it because I saw Floyd Mayweather Jr. fight and just wanted to try. When I first started, my parents really didn't like it. They were afraid I might get hurt, but I liked doing it. This is what I really picked up. I tried some other sports and I didn't like them. I tried football, but I was skinny for that. I tried track. I was okay, but boxing is what I really like doing. And I really like training with Steve." Bratter said he's not a typical kid. He's a pleasure to train. He's a hard trainer. He puts his heart into it. He comes into the gym, gets himself dressed. You never have to say anything. You get him to work from the beginning to the end. Some fire, you push. Come on, let's get going. So pretty good story there. He also said, "I'm just looking at the kid. I knew what he was. I knew him as a good kid. Had some kids that come in the door, and I'm like, don't let it hit you on the way out. They have attitudes. With him, none of the things that ever really entered my mind. If I would have seen some arrogance, I would have thrown him out, too. It's just a pleasure to work with. He comes in the gym, gets himself ready to work. He's a great kid, that's all." Another story of sport, politics, and religion. Tough. I'm going to check the email again, see if we got any phone number that I can notice. Nothing yet. Slot, which we usually have been doing lately. Hopefully everything's all right. Yeah, we got some boxing to talk about, upcoming boxing matches. UFC events this week.
Well, we had the big Kennedy Golovkin fight last week.
Oh, yes, we do. And Kennedy Golovkin versus Daniel Gill. The opening event wasn't that great. Ryan Jennings.
No, like I said, I didn't get to see the fights live. I mean, I eventually got to see the Golovkin fight. And, you know, the guy's power is scary. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. I mean, it's scary. The punch that, you know, finished Gil off and you sent the slow motion clip was a counter shot after he got hit flush. I mean, Gil landed a beautiful right hand, and then he just, like, fired back with a right hand and just completely, like, just decimated him, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it was interesting, too, to see him, after that knockdown, he got up to his feet. He seemed like he could have continued. But that kind of questioned him, asked him if he wanted to continue, and he just kind of looked at his corner and shook his head. He wasn't doing all that bad either. So that was kind of surprising, power of the mental.
Well, and, you know, yeah, you can tell, and that's like, Gil basically, you know, checked himself out. He checked himself out of fight, and, I mean, there was no real, you know, reason given. I mean, you know, was he injured? You know, was he, did he maybe break his jaw? Who knows? But yeah, he basically felt that and checked himself right out. You know, I'll come to fight another day. I'll come to fight another day just against somebody else.
Right. Unbelievable. And you know, one thing I noticed about that fight. Just the pinpoint accuracy of some of those shots. And you can see it in the slow motion replay that right before that, another shot whizzed right by his nose.
You know, apparently Max Kellerman made the analogy of Triple G to the Brown Bomber himself, Joe Louis. Now, I know that's pretty early yet because and he has not been super tested against the highest levels at this point, through no fault of his own. But he said, Kellerman really said he's seen those kind of parallels. I don't know, maybe that's a stretch, but I don't know what you guys think about it.
Well, you're right. It is way too early to make that comparison. What I do see that would incite a comparison like that is this, I guess, the steely cold way that he conducts himself in there. You know, Joe Louis was almost like a silent assassin. You know, he came out there and it was like he was on you and it could end at any second. I see that. I see that. And also, it's like, just the way Joe Louis went out there and, you know, almost like stalked his opponent. Yeah, I can see where the comparisons come in, but right now it is just too early.
Right. And also, Joe was a finisher. I mean, don't get in trouble against him. And Golovka's apparently the same way. I mean, he, for everything I've seen, do not get in trouble with him.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting to see the suggestions on who he should fight next. Everybody from Andre Ward to actually Edwin Rodriguez. Last fought Andre Ward. And you gotta think it's gotta be somebody either undefeated or somebody with not championship experience. Because this guy's been mowing everybody down. And somebody's got to get in there and challenge him.
Well, he says he wants Cotto.
Yeah, that was interesting. He was asked right after the fight, and he mentioned a couple names, Peter Quillen and Miguel Cotto. But Miguel Cotto's... he's got a lot of other people wanting to fight him now. And he's been trained by...
Well, Cotto brings him a lot of money.
Yeah. Got that kind of style too. That people want to see. So even though he's not really a huge belt holder, there, he's got people lined up ready to fight him. So we'll see what happens there. But we're going to call Antonio's publicity lady here. Yo.
ThinkZilla Consulting. At the tone, record your message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or dial pound.
Hey, Azaline, this is Rabble Rouser Rich Bergeron here. We're wondering what's going on with Antonio Tarver. He was supposed to call in a half an hour ago, and we have nothing. I never got a phone number for him, and I know I sent you over the call-in number. I just tweeted it out to him as well, and have not heard anything. So just hoping you could get in touch with him. And no, we're waiting for his call. We're on till 10 o'clock, which is another 55 minutes or so here. So we got plenty of time to get it done. Just have some call in. The number again is 347-324-3228. We got a lot of listeners waiting for this one, so please get in touch with them and get this show on the road. So hopefully that works. As I mentioned, the undercard fight there on the Gennady Golovkin card was not that entertaining. No, it wasn't. Perez versus Jennings.
Brian Jennings, yeah.
Jennings got the edge there in the end, kind of started to come back and did not look like he's ready for Klitschko, that's for sure.
No.
We got some big fights coming up tomorrow night on ESPN. We got a couple big HBO boxing cards also on Saturday. But first comes first, Thomas Williams Jr. fighting Gabriel Campillo in the main event tomorrow night on ESPN2. Williams Jr. is 17-0 with 12 knockouts. Campillo is 23-6-1 with 10 knockouts. Andre Durrell, 21-1. With 14 knockouts, facing Vladimir Biossi, who's 54-2 with 7 knockouts in the full main event there. We also have about 8-round welterweight fight between Will Omotoso and Eduardo Flores. Omotoso is 23-1 with 19 knockouts, and Flores is 19-13-3 with 13 knockouts. Oh, and I forgot to mention Roy Jones Jr., another guy who went to Latvia over the weekend. We listened to his little rap at the beginning of the show. He's actually a former opponent of Westman. Roy Jones Jr. ended up taking out Courtney Frye. Got another victory. Nope, there, so very impressive. We'll wrap things up after this. I don't think he voted. Singing over another song, I think, and just adding some of his own lyrics. Anyway, as I mentioned, Saturday night, got some HBO cards. I did want to mention something we've been hyping on our blog. The big multi-international cruiserweight titles on the line in London. Dwork Hall, promoted by Cheyenne Batra, SSE Promotions, on the first card. Mark Prince is in the main event there, cruiserweight. He's 21-1 with 17 knockouts. He's fighting Jiří Spasina. He's 12-11 with one knockout. Also on the card, George Hilliard versus Tommy Tolan. Hilliard's 10-6-1. Tolan's 4-15-1. And Hilliard has 5 knockout wins. Tolan has 3. The Iron Man of MMA, Travis Fulton, is also fighting in a main event this weekend in Waterloo, Iowa, on Saturday. Fighting a guy who's 2-7. He's 21-37 with one draw and 20 knockouts. We've met
six-round heavyweight fight.
Rich, have we ever had Travis Fulton on as a guest?
No, but I imagine he would be a great one.
I met him the same night of that Shoney Carter card down in Indiana when my buddies, training partners, Forrest Pets and Jeff Cox were on that show, and Travis was on that show. But what is his record now? It's going to be like 300 and something, you know. If we could line him up, what an interesting. And he also, I know he also boxes.
Right. That's what I said. He just had a boxing. He's got a boxing match. So it's kind of interesting because usually he goes in and loses. He's got 37 losses to 21 wins. And usually when he wins, it's a guy with less than 10 boxing matches. But he has made some pretty decent names. Jeremy Williams. 42-5-1 when we fought him back in 2013, March 2013. That's when we fought Galen Brown. Fought Galen Brown back in 2012. Lost the unanimous 4-round decision there. Fred Oquendo got disqualified there.
Wow.
Right. Chaz Witherspoon. Got TKO'd in the third round back in 2009. Lou Savarese. Not Lou Savarese back in 2007. Got TKO'd in the third round in that one. Savarese was 44-6. So, he's no pushover. He kind of is a pushover in boxing.
Mm-hmm. What is his MMA record off? Do you have that in front of you there, his MMA record?
I'd have to look that one up, but he's over 300 fights, I'm sure.
Wow.
He's pretty much widely recognized as the guy with the most MMA fights in history. He also fought Brian Minto back when he was undefeated, 15-0 in 2004. Fought Rob Calloway in 2005, Albert Sosnowski also the same year, just a few weeks later. Both of them are TKOs in the second round. Been around.
Boy, he just seems to epitomize that anyone, anytime, anywhere. Oh, that's
exactly.
An amazing record. Amazing record.
Interesting. Well, on Saturday, as I said, there's two HBO events, Sergey Kovalev versus Blake Caparello from Jersey, Atlantic City, New Jersey. That's being put on by our former guest, Kathy Duva, and Lee DiBella promoting that one. DiBella and main event.
I thought about going that fight.
And at the Rebel Resort, the light heavyweight fight for the WBO light heavyweight title. Kovalev is 24-0-1 with 22 knockouts. Caparello is 19-0-1 with 6 knockouts. So somebody's always going to go. That's just another
thing. And I know Kovalev has come out there and he's trying to push for a fight with Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah.
I read something on that the other day. I don't know if it was a tweet or somebody posted it in one of my boxing feeds.
When I was on Facebook the other day, I saw a picture of Reggie Johnson with Bernard Hopkins, and it said something about that was his dream fight.
All right.
So I wrote under it in the comments, this Glenn Johnson's dream fight, too. And somebody suggested, well, why doesn't a chance to fight Hopkins? So that's kind of an interesting idea. I know they've actually floated that before, and they do talk to each other. But let's see. But there's also pretty decent co-main event here, light heavyweight again, Isaac Chalimba, 22-2 with 9 knockouts, fighting Corey Cummings, 17-6-1 with 13 knockouts. Also got Dmitry Mikhailenko, 16-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Sesshu Powell, who's 25-5 with 15 knockouts. And our former guest, not too long ago, Joey DeVico, who's 10-3-2 with 3 knockouts, fighting David Williams, who's 7-8-2 with 2 knockouts. So that's a fight he can easily handle, I'm sure.
Yeah, Joey put a message out there today. You know, he's excited about, you know, getting a chance to fight on the HBO card, you know, even though it's not going to be televised. You know, he's still, you know, going to be out there and, you know, under the HBO lights and make a nice little payday.
Oh, Travis Fulton's MMA record, 250 wins and 49 losses.
Yeah, wow. Just over 300.
I guess a lot of MMA fights.
And if you're looking at Sherdog, I'm sure that's wrong. It's probably about 20 more on there.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Anyway. One of these days. Sure, it'd be easier to track down than Antonio Tarver was. People haven't heard anything back from him. And another tweet. Sit here, talk amongst yourselves.
I had to take these stupid earbuds out. They were killing me. Hey, can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
How does anybody work at the gym with these stupid earbuds in their ears and keep them in? See, that's a serious question. I don't know if I have fuzzy shaped ears. But I get to hear, but I've been trying to use them for the last 2 weeks and get to hear me better. I'm sitting still. They fall out.
I
imagine it can be a treadmill or a elliptical machine or chatterboxing.
Yeah, I never really was much for doing that, you know. Usually I just listen to what's on the radio out loud in the gym, or I just go without music. But I've never been a big Walkman or CD player or iPhone person with the music and the earphones.
Well, I'm like the opposite. It's like, if I'm working out, I need some kind of music and loud. And, you know, a lot of times, like, I'll have my... Well, now I have my MP3 player, but I, for a long time, refused to use a CD player. I started with a tape Walkman because I could, at the time, make the mix with the songs I wanted. You know, I would record a tape with different songs from CDs that I had, and I would go that way. I had to do it that way. I had to have certain songs at a certain time, and I'm still like that. Now I learned how to burn CDs, and now I know how to burn tapes and albums and create my own to make it to my MP3 player.
Right. Well, getting back to the big boxing matches, we got the other USA HBO card. They actually at the Cosmopolitan in Vegas. They're gone with this one. So Bob Arum, top rank promotional enterprise here. Jesse Vargas in the main event, 24-0. Fighting Anton Novikov, who's 29-0. Both of them have similar knockouts. Vargas has 9, Novikov has 10. And it's for the WBA World Light Welterweight title, this one. So a little hardware on the line. Also on the card, a pretty interesting co-main event, 10-round welterweight fight between Brandon Rios and Diego Gabriel Chavez. Rios is 31-2-1 with 23 knockouts. Chavez is 23-1 with 19 knockouts. And third decent fight on this card is Jesse Magdaleno, who's 18-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Carlos Rodriguez, who's 18-14-4 with 10 knockouts. And way down on the card, we got a 4-round middleweight fight between Shane Mosley Jr. and Jerome Jones. Both of them are undefeated so far in their short careers. Jones is 1-0-1 with 1 knockout, and Mosley Jr. is 1-0 with 1 knockout. Good luck to him, the son of the legend there. And we also have the vacant International Boxing Organization female heavyweight title on the line in St. Martin. Sonia Lomonikis from Gleason's Gym. She's heavyweight, going 2-minute rounds there. And Carlette Ewell. Lomonikis is 9-1-2 with 1 knockout. Ewell is 15-7-1 with 9 knockouts. And over in Berlin on Sunday, there's another big female fight, welterweight. This is the main event of this whole card. Jennifer Retzky, 14-1-1, 9 knockouts, fighting Florence Muthoni, who's 11-3-1 with 5 knockouts. And also on the line, another fight there is the vacant International Boxing Organization youth welterweight title. Fighting for that would be Dennis, with a Z, Denise Ilbay, or Ilbay. He's 11-0 with 6 knockouts. He's fighting Ramadani Shaori, who's 18-4-1 with 10 knockouts. See how that goes. Let's see if we can tweet Coco the CEO. A lot of news, so interview going. Now we got about a half an hour left, and I'm out of news. Scroll through Twitter to find out some breaking news, or we'll have to talk about baseball since the Red Sox are having a fire sale. And the Phillies didn't get anybody, Tony. What's going on?
You know what makes it even worse? The one player they were looking like they were going to trade was Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee came back from the injury. Wasn't all that sharp. They missed the trade deadline. He got hurt in tonight's game.
Yeah, I ended up... traded 6 players before the All-Star break, the Red Sox. I think it was Jake Peavy started it, and John Lester we got rid of today. The guy you and I saw at Fenway when you came up here from Philly for that game. Johnny Gomes is gone. We lost a reliever. Who else? Steven Drew. He traded to the Yankees. Yikes.
Wow.
It's been a busy day for the Red Sox. Rebuilding. Guess they're giving up on picking up that 13-game deficit between them and first place.
I had a friend of mine say something on Facebook today. He goes, apparently the Phillies traded their general manager, Ruben Amaro Jr., for a bag of rocks. And I said, I'm calling your bluff, Lou. That's bullshit. Nobody would give up a perfectly good bag of rocks to get him.
Right. Somebody just retweeted my tweet to Antonio. Somebody just Machete Malone, thank you for giving the shout out again. Magic Man, we need your magic. He's got to be thinking it's 8 o'clock Vegas time. Somebody out there has got to know his number. Give him a call. Mason the Lion Dixon. That was his last tweet. It was about Mason the Lion Dixon. That was 5 hours ago, so I guess he's not on on Twitter right now. Oh, he does have a website now. It's now officialantoniotarver.com. Like I said, he had a situation where I think antoniotarver.com got taken over by somebody else after he was kind of inactive for a while. But he's got a pretty interesting boxing record. I was looking at it the other day, and I thought it was kind of interesting that he's kind of like the king of adjustments. You know, he's had the pleasure of rematching so many people he lost to, and doing well, much better the second time.
I mean, you figure Will Jones, Glenn Johnson, Eric Harden, I mean, three right there.
I wonder if he's thinking he's going to do better the next time on this rematch.
Maybe.
Or, verbally sparring with us. He didn't even make the weigh-in for this one. What's going on, Antonio? You know, there's also an Antoine Tarver. It's a super middleweight. He was only 7-1, though. In London. Yeah, this is kind of interesting. Especially considering, you know, not only did we set this up with his publicist, but you know, he also retweeted our constant reminders. Yikes. Yeah, about 7 hours ago was when he retweeted it. Tune in tonight at 8:30 p.m. EST for our fightradio.info interview with Antonio Tarver. He was the only one that retweeted that. His son retweeted the one prior to that. And that one said, don't forget to tune in to the FNU Combat Sports Show tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern for our interview. Yikes. I wonder if Junior is on Twitter right now. Let's go to Junior's profile. Yeah, Antonio Tarver Jr.'s Twitter profile is @Tarver_champ_junior. So his last tweet was that retweet, which was yesterday. So Junior's not even on Twitter right now. Yeah, back on July 21st, the father tweeted, son, you have to remove the word champ from your moniker. You haven't earned it yet. You'll appreciate it when you do. So while we're waiting, does anybody have any suggestions what we should talk about? What was that, Tony?
Football training camps have started.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. It's going to be hopefully the first full season of Rob Gronkowski staying on the field, full health, for a long time. And I just saw today that Darrell Revis got a pick six against Brady in practice.
I think the Eagles are, like last year, New England came down for a couple days, and they did a joint practice. I think the Eagles are going up to New England this year. Chip Kelly and Bill Belichick are, apparently close friends. Everybody thinks Chip Kelly, because he coached at Oregon, is a West Coast guy, but actually he's originally from New England.
Yeah.
He was from New Hampshire.
Yeah, he used to coach at UNH up here. University of New Hampshire. Yeah, I think the Patriots are going to be pretty big this year. They made a lot of improvements in the defense, and they haven't picked up.
The Eagles did addition by subtraction. The kid they drafted in the second round, they said he's been just lightened up in practice. He's a lot bigger. He's 6'3", 212. He has good body control, good hands, long arms. He's what Chip Kelly wants. Pretty fast guy. But their improvements have to be on defense. They got Malcolm Jennings from the Saints. And a lot of it's just going to be the guys getting acclimated to the second year of that team. The Eagles ran a 4-3 for as long as I can remember. I'm talking back to the 80s. And then they finally turn around and go to a 3-4. And last year, especially I think early, they didn't have the personnel to run that. And now, got into it.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season, that's for sure. A lot of guys are actually already out for the first few games from either PEDs or illegal drugs, a lot of marijuana, bust. I think at least 10 people have already been suspended for at least a couple games, including Ray Rice, which was actually one of the biggest stories in all of sports this week. Ray Rice had to have a freaking press conference today to talk about, how sorry he is about this incident where he knocked out his fiance, now his wife. And he kind of babbled on and on about how he's real concerned about his kid more than anything, finding out on Google someday when she gets old enough about all this. And, he made a point to say he hadn't really publicly apologized to his own wife. So a lot of people are pissed about that one, thinking he should have got suspended for way more than two games over that. But you have to consider, he went through the whole legal process, and they ended up doing arbitration. That had to be pretty sobering for him. And he mentioned today, he's known this woman since high school. Long-standing relationship. It's gotta be even worse when you've known somebody that long to have to be in the situation where you beat her up. I'm not proud to admit it, but I had a fight with a girl one time I used to like. She picked a fight with me and called me out to school. It was when I was in elementary school. And I beat the crap out of her. But it was kind of a different story, It wasn't like, it wasn't that brutal. I didn't knock her out or anything. I just hit her a couple times. She hit the ground, and that was it. But I wasn't proud of it. I wasn't going around telling everybody, hey, I beat up a girl. But I didn't get arrested either, so. Not the same thing. Anyway, it doesn't look like we're going to have Antonio on. Still don't have any word from him, so I am going to put the number out there on Twitter for any fight fan or fighter who wants to take his place for the next few minutes. Anybody listening, if you want to call in and suggest a topic or anything, our number is 347-324-3228. You call in, they put you on hold, and we click on you if we want to have you. So if anybody out there wants to chime in, feel free.
Hey, how about Nick Diaz and Anderson Silva?
I did mention that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of briefly went over it, but I think there's a reason why Anderson Silva asked for that fight. Number one, he knows how long Diaz has been on the shelf, so they're both kind of coming in a little rusty. And number two, he knows he can beat him. And number three, I guess, another reason is that's one of the fights that Diaz won.
Mm-hmm.
Back when Silva was still champion. So. It's more entertaining than I think it's going to be, but I really don't like Diaz's attitude, and you know, especially since he came back, even though he's kind of been apologetic and was real humble about going to Dana White and Lorenzo Petita and straightening this out and get back in the cage, he just went on a kind of a rant about, you know, not even enjoying fighting. You don't want to see somebody doing something just for the paycheck. You know, even if it's bricklaying or construction, you know, if somebody has a dream and a talent that they're good at, that they could be doing instead of doing what they hate, you know, you'd rather see them do that. But I guess Nick Diaz doesn't have a passion like that. He doesn't even like fighting. Came out and said that, you know, it's just a job to him. You know, does it because he has to. So, that's interesting to me, but I don't think he's as good as everybody makes him out to be. His last good fight to me was when he beat the shit out of Frank Shamrock and retired him. And it was actually the most classy thing I've ever seen him do, because he made Frank Shamrock stand up on his feet after that fight. Helped him out. And, you know, he was a real big fan of Frank's when Frank was in his prime. So, you know, very classy for him to do that. Putting out the tweet. Something there. Just a matter of talking to the lawyer. Well, and this lawyer must be milking. Must get $100 an hour to negotiate.
Okay. Yeah, the last thread on the underground on that one was, I guess Dana was just saying negotiations are complicated. Is the quote that he used complicated?
Unbelievable. You know, you think it'd be easy enough to do. I'm almost certain that it's going to be Rousey's next fight, because I'm pretty sure they already set up Kat Zingano with the tune-up fight. She's coming back kind of rusty off knee surgery. So she's not really an option right now. Cyborg's not yet signed to the UFC. Holly Holm's still recovering from her broken arm, and she's not going to get a regular right-away title shot, according to her contract. So it's got to be. It's got to be Carano.
Yeah, I guess from a marketing standpoint, that's the only thing that makes sense.
And of all the people who aren't getting a tune-up fight, I think she's the one who needs it most.
Yes.
So it's baffling. You know, like I sent you guys the article right after our show last week. It's all about the sex appeal because, you know, these two good-looking girls there, Carano and Rousey. And sure enough, somebody wrote an article with both of them in bikinis, you know. Or no, Rousey was in a picture of her from the ESPN Body Magazine shoot, but she wasn't wearing anything. She covered herself up with her hands. And then, of course, Carano was in there. She was flat out. So, I don't know, if you like to see good-looking girls beat each other up, that fight's for you. I think Rousey's going to be doing the beat. Unless they have a really good choreographer.
Yeah, it's I've thought about how Gina can win, and just not it's just I'm kind of interested to see what the odds will be on this one. You know, considering what they were in Ronda's last fight, wonder if the odds makers will give Gina a little better chance.
Yeah, another guy on Twitter mentioned today that it's kind of strange that the UFC. Has to go outside of their organization for their biggest fights. They picked up Eddie Alvarez for this Donald Cerrone fight. Like, they can't build from within. You know, Gina Carano gets picked up, or is getting picked up, based Rousey, because they don't have anybody really up to her par, except for Zingano, I guess. And I really don't even think Holly Holm is ready. Well, we'll be ready, even after two or three fights. You know, she's way behind Rousey as far as well-roundedness. I saw a video on another Twitter. I've been on Twitter a lot, if you can't tell. Another post on Twitter I saw was a video of Rousey just throwing a guy around the other day in drills. And he did this judo throw move where she grabbed the guy in like a guillotine choke and then slid under his legs and flipped him on his back. I don't even know how she did it. Unbelievable leverage and just ability to do these crazy takedowns. You know, I was more familiar with her head throw takedown there of her last opponent. I've actually done that in wrestling, but you know, with a little bit of a tweak to it. But she does it in a judo style. Very impressive. Still nobody yet on Blog Talk Radio's interface. Trying to see if we got any. Any interesting tweets worth mentioning? Nothing really popping out.
I gotta do more on Twitter.
Yeah, it's addicting, you know. You wouldn't think You know, writing 140 characters would be all that addictive, but it's become my most popular platform. You know, the key is getting people in your demographic. You know, you go to a site like that's pretty famous out there in the combat sports genre, and you start following everybody they follow, or going to their followers and following them, and you know, most people will follow back if they're not, you know, pseudo famous or too big for their britches or whatever. They don't follow people back. And there's just so many stars and major people using Twitter because of the convenience factor, because of the fact that you're only putting 140 characters at a time. It's like, that's the easiest thing to do on a mobile phone. It's easier than going to Facebook. So it really is the best social network out there, and I think it's got the most fighters on it. I mean, look at UFC. They got a freaking bonus for fighters that use Twitter effectively. So, unbelievable. Pretty interesting. And what I do is I retweet a lot of people. So, you know, especially these, you know, the big fight news stories. And I also have it automated so that every time a major MMA site or boxing site does a story, it automatically tweets it onto my site, onto my profile. So a lot of people retweet those, you know. So you gotta develop enough of a feed that people want to follow you for that reason. And so I get a lot of people from fight circles that follow us and that retweet us too. And then, you know, you get story ideas. People put suggestions out there. One guy said something about King Mo the other day. He says King Mo is the most overrated fighter in MMA. So I replied to him, I doubt that. You know, I could think of a lot more people. So he says, give me a list. So I gave him a little list, and then I tweeted his handle. And after that, I said, this is the most overfollowed guy in MMA, because he called King Mo overhyped, is what he did. I came back, I think, with Nick Diaz, Chuck Congo, Ben Askren, I think, is overhyped. He hasn't really fought in the UFC yet. There's a lot of them. Tito Ortiz, even. I mean, he hasn't won a big fight in years. So, people give me all kinds of ideas. And another thing, you know, not just mixed martial arts news, but general news, too. You learn stuff from people putting out news stories. One of the most interesting tweets I saw the other day, it actually had the wrong address for the story, so I had to look it up. But somebody tweeted about an elephant that was given a fatal dose of acid back in the 60s. The scientists were doing an experiment, and they killed this famous elephant named Tusco because they gave him too much acid, LSD. And they ended up trying to revive him, and they gave him all kinds of amphetamine. Oh, man, poor guy. The thing just keeled over, went into convulsions, and died. So, you know, there's all kinds of things you can learn on Twitter. I knew about all kinds of government programs where they were just dosing random people with LSD. I never heard of this elephant. And still nothing from Jarver. Update. Got a big fight coming up next weekend. Danny Garcia versus Rod Salka. Also on that card. Lamont Peterson versus Edgar Santana, and Daniel Jacobs versus Jared Fletcher.
And Garcia said he was
title fight designation from that fight, saying that Chalka is not a worthy challenger.
Really?
Yeah. It just happened weeks ago.
So they're saying he's not a viable challenger for his belt?
He is not a worthy challenger that will come out and say this. He does not deserve the title shot.
Also, as part of that card, our former guest Steve Farhood came up with his top 10 underdogs list. And, of course, number one is Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson back in February of 1990. Second one is Evander Holyfield knocking out Mike Tyson in the 11th round back in November of 1996. 24-1 favorite in that one. Douglas was a 42-1 underdog in that Tyson fight. And the third one is Randy Turpin when he beat Sugar Ray Robinson 15 rounds back in July 1951. Robinson went in with a record of 128 wins, one loss, and two draws. And he had not lost 1943. So Randy Turpin gave him his second loss there. Number four on Farhood's list was Frankie Randall. Won the 12th round over, won a decision, I guess, 12th round decision over Julio Cesar Chavez back on January 29th of 1994 in Las Vegas. And Frankie Randall won the WBC Super Lightweight title with that one. Chavez was 89-0-1 at the time. Suffered his first knockdown and first loss in the same bout. And, of course, there was Haseem Rahman versus Lennox Lewis back on April 22, 2001 in Gauteng, South Africa. Rahman won the WBC and IBF heavyweight titles. I would have thought the first Lennox Lewis loss would have been on here. Oliver McCall. Yeah.
I think you know what fight where you get a lot of credit for an upset, maybe because it wasn't a world title fight, but it was back in the late 80s, I think around like 87-ish, there was a fighter out of Philadelphia by the name of Freddie Pendleton. He was 16. And he would get a lot of fights at ESPN and USA, but he was perennial 500 fighter. And when he was good on, he basically get knocked out by Roger Mayweather on, I think it was ESPN. And this is the one thing about Pendleton is he really started dedicating himself to the sport. And he ended up knocking Mayweather out cold with a single right hand.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things on there that I seem to remember. Like, when you had that heavyweight relay back in the early 80s, you had Larry Holmes, and then you had a bunch of other heavyweights. The Holmes lost a bunch of strength, I think, to clarify on there. And then you have fighters there, like Michael Gates, who was a heavyweight to get knocked out. And a big John Tate getting knocked out by Mike Hercules Weaver. A lot of them, you know, were considered upset. You don't forget about Braddock and Cinderella Man.
Yeah. Well, we got the rest of the list to go here still. We got number six is Billy Backus knocking out Jose Napoles in the fourth round back in December 1970, Syracuse, New York. The local challenger, Backus, had 10 losses. He was a 9-1 underdog. Napoles was stopped on counts. We had Leon Spinks beating Muhammad Ali back in February of 1978 in Vegas, winning the world heavyweight title. In only his ninth pro bout, Olympic gold medalist Spinks, the greatest. Number eight, Corey Sanders beat Vladimir Klitschko in the second round by knockout back on 2003 in Germany. And the southpaw from South Africa crushed Vlad with a huge left hand. Series of huge left hands, winning the WBO heavyweight title in the process. And Muhammad Ali's Cassius Clay also made the list in a tie at number 9 when he KO'd Sonny Liston back in February 25th, 1964 in Miami, winning the world heavyweight title. And, of course, he tied with himself, Muhammad Ali knocking out George Foreman in round 8 on October 30th, 1974 in Kinshasa, Zaire. A story today about Zaire, now known as the Congo. A guy named Gidlin Maduma is trying to get back there for the 40th anniversary of that fight this year and have a bout there. But nothing's been official, been set up officially yet. They're just talking about it. But Ali was a 7-1 underdog. And,
I remember he was a huge underdog against Liston. I don't quite remember the odds being that heavy against Foreman. I mean, I know he was an underdog, but wow, so 7-1.
His own handlers, according to this, were so in fear of what would happen to Ali that they reportedly mapped out a route from the stadium to the hospital. So, interesting there, but. You know, that was his famous rope-a-dope performance. And I guess they had good reason to do that, because he didn't take a lot of punishment. The 10th one is Kirkland Lang over Roberto Duran back on September 4th, 1982. It was a 10-round decision for Lang. He was a 7-1 underdog again, and Duran was 74-3 at the time.
Yeah, that I think was the low point of Duran's relationship with Don King, because he went to get his check afterwards, and King made him wait for about 4 hours. And, that's when Duran he turned everything around. But that probably was the low point of his career. And then starting in 1983, he started to turn things around again with his fight with Pepino Cuevas, which I was 4 seats back out there in L.A. And then he beat Davey Moore for the junior middleweight title and gave Hagler quite a run for his money for the middleweight title.
Now, if we had to do that kind of list for MMA, who would you put at the top?
Wow. There you go, Mike. Well, Sarah and GSP come to my mind, but...
You are psychic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You read my mind on that one.
Yeah. But I'm sure we have some other interesting ones, too. That'll be a little thing I'll try to work on this week and see what I can put together for next week. Because we've had some interesting ones there, too.
Frank Mir versus Tim Sylvia might be one. Back in Tim Sylvia's prime. Broke his arm.
Well, I think that Sylvia had to be considered the favorite, but I don't remember, because to me that was just purely a stylistic matchup. Everyone kind of felt at the time if Mir could get it to if Mir could survive on the feet and get it to the ground, he had an excellent chance, because Mir's submission game then was just off the charts. So I don't know I'm sure it was an upset, but not that much of an upset, I don't think.
All right, well, we got the 90-second warning. There's a 60-second warning. We apologize to anyone tuning in hoping for the Antonio Tarver interview. I know it doesn't make us look good, and, of course, Antonio, I don't know what's going on, but not cool to be tweeting it the day of and the day before and then not show up. For the interview, we'd like to think he's a little more professional than that, but hopefully we can reschedule for next week and make amends for everybody, and we'll have even more time to promote it. So thanks anyway for listening. And we'll be back next week with Antonio or another guest, for sure. And a lot more news.
All right, guys. We'll do it up again.
Sir, adios. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Dave.